But one of my teachers recently stated, if you want enduring peace and happiness in your life, don't resist your life and what it brings to you. It seems so simple, and it's basically a restating of the first three noble truths, that life itself is bumpy and things are not under our control. But the suffering comes because we push back. We're constantly trying to make things optimized for ourselves. And then the third truth, it's possible to live without that. And that's what he's saying. If you don't resist life and what it brings you, you're pretty free. You're happy if everything is okay. So think about that. You know, we tend to come to meditation to think we need to change ourselves to be a certain way in order to be happy and peaceful. But the truth in his saying is basically, if you just step back and stop resisting, stop controlling, you're home free. You know, and that's, in a way, the point of the Dharma path is, how do we find that? You know, why is that so difficult? What gets in the way? I remember a few years ago, I was online reading somebody's insight meditation instructions, and it was so funny. It was a renowned teacher. He said, yes, I give the instructions, and it's very clear and simple. You know, you're watching the flow of experience. He said, then I close my eyes and chaos breaks out every time. You know, why is this so hard to do? What gets in the way? So basically what gets in the way is we tend to live in service of the ego-identified mind that feels separate, that feels cut off, that feels limited. And the shorthand I've often used in this sangha is the small mind. But you all know what I mean by that mind that feels separated, that's looking out for number one here. And what gets in the way is, the first thing that gets in the way is our small mind thinks it's in control. This is the plan. There's a cartoon on the desk over there that had, take a look at it. It's my plan. It's like me goal, straight line. That's the way the small egoic mind thinks of life. Oh, I need to lose 10 pounds. Oh, I'll just do it, right? No problem. And then there's life, which is more up and down. And the reason is the egoic mind, even though it thinks it's in control, is not. But we've all been there. And when I started practice, it was so easy to read the Eightfold Path and go, well, that makes a lot of sense. Yes, life would be better. I'll just do that. I will do it perfectly. I will work so hard. I'm going to be mindful every moment. I will never forget where I put my keys or my phone. I'm going to be, you know, that's the illusion of the small mind thinking it actually is in control. And, you know, when we buy into it, when we do it right, we're like, oh, I did that so well. And, you know, and we all know people who, we carry this kind of dharmic superiority around with us a bit. You know, I do it, we all do it a bit. But when you do that, you're also buying into that when you mess up and you do forget where your keys are, or you don't say the right thing at the right time, then you feel that you failed, or you've made a mistake. So God bless us all, because the aspiration to practice perfectly, it comes from the sincerity of our heart, so it's not an enemy, but it's not free either, is it? It's not freedom. And but what it does do, and the reason why it's not an enemy, is these aspirations do lead to skillfulness, right? When we make the aspiration, and we, oh, this is what it's like to be mindful. Oh, this is what it's like to watch my speech, to look at the precepts and try to, it breeds skillfulness. And skillfulness and freedom are partners. They're not the same, but they're partners. And skillfulness paves the way. So skillfulness from the small mind is a kind of control. It's a kind of like longing for self-perfection. And it's not freedom, because if you mess up, which of course we do, we suffer. So that's the first reason this is so hard to do, is because we're trying to do it from this small egoic self. And the second reason why this is so hard to do is because from that small mind, we're always serving preferences. Always in the service of preferences. Another way to say this is, we don't want to experience anything uncomfortable. The insecurities, the worries, the self-doubt, the all that stuff. The small mind thinks, when it comes to practice, when I do this, I will no longer experience that. That will be freedom for me. If I no longer experience insecurity or worry or problems in life, then I will be free. Pema Chodron once said in one of her books to never underestimate the mind's ability to flinch away from even the smallest discomfort. I mean, you know, the egoic mind, because it sees freedom as being able to control life and only have pleasant experience, it is so good at this illusion that the tiniest little bit of discomfort and it's out of there, right? I mean, we have just seen it in our practice. I found myself, one of the things about practicing before giving a Dharma speech is you're starting to think about your speech. And so the part of me is like, no, don't want that, don't want that. I want to sit. And then part of me was like, hey, relax. That's what's happening. And it's so much less work to just sit with what's happening rather than trying to prefer something different. Right? Do you notice that in your practice as well? So freedom means accepting discomfort on its own terms. To say to ourselves, oh, I see you. There's the mind rehearsing the talk, and there's a little anxiety there. And then there's the part that doesn't want that anxiety. I see you there. Welcome. There you are. Take all the time you need. Take all the space you need. If it turns out I can't even get a sentence out, okay. Okay, well, I'll survive. You know, it's okay. Mickey Singer, who is wrote The Unfettered Soul, one of my favorite awakened teachers, said the price of freedom is feeling pain and discomfort. So when you feel pain and discomfort, if his words are to fall behind it, make bigger room for it, that's the price of freedom. So it's basically the willingness to accept what is present. Gets us back to the statement. If you want peace in your life, say yes to life. Say yes to what's come up. But how do we find the emotional willingness, the pana, the right out, the right understanding that we want to do this? It's not a chore. It's something our hearts want to do. So first let's explore. Hang on, I think I skipped a page here. Nope. Okay. First, let's explore what it would be like to just be in the moment, to just be with what's happening right now and say yes to it. So I'd like you to close your eyes right now for a moment. And just as we have done in practice, simply feel the range of experience right now. Notice the body, sensations, mind, heart. So I'd like you to notice anything that's even the tiniest bit uncomfortable right now. You can usually recognize it because that voice in your mind will say, gosh, I'm already hungry and I want to have lunch right now. Or, oh, this chair is a little uncomfortable. Or, am I going to like this talk? So whatever it is that feels a tiny bit discomfortable, I want you to notice it. And with that discomfort, notice the aversion however slight, that is present with it. And the aversion is the part that says, I don't want this. Oh God, not this again. When will this go away? Why has this come up? It's the argument with it. I don't want to experience this right now. I want a good sitting. I don't want to be thinking about my talk. I want it to be different. If you explore the energy of it, it's kind of a pulling or a pushing force or a cutting off. It's a sense of cutting off something, trying to make a barrier inside. So just take a moment and explore that. And if you can't feel anything, if this moment is totally comfortable for you right now, we're all applauding you. Just find something in your life that is uncomfortable. Just go back to some situation you're in the middle of that brings that clenching, that resistance. This, when we follow this pulling, this cutting off, when we follow aversion, it's fine that it's there. But when we follow it, this is how we say no to life. So feel the energy. The energy is one thing. Following it is something else. So let's focus on that. Instead of seeing this aversion, this not wanting as a problem, let's see it as a gateway. Let's see it as the place that when we see it clearly, what naturally arises is the desire for the right effort to go from resistance to saying, okay, I'm okay. Open your eyes again. So again, from the ego-identified mind's point of view, it would say, oh, well, we'll just get rid of our preferences. I can see that preferences are the problem. I'm going to get rid of them. And as ridiculous as that seems, we have seen so many people in the Buddhist tradition, including this one, say, oh, no problem, I'll just get rid of preferences. But we can't do that. Because the small mind is not aware and in control of how much the unconsciousness, the causes and conditions come up all the time. It isn't in control of that. So we can't get rid of our preferences. So, and even trying to do that is sort of another kind of control. So rather the problem is that we let our minds and its preferences run our lives. That's the issue, not that they're there, but we follow the flow of it. Think of how much of your life you spend in service of fear, insecurity, worry, separation, distrust, despair. And there's a cost that it's never-ending instability, isn't it? It's a never-ending pull. So we could let our hearts lead us. We could let peace and joy lead us. I had an analogy in yesterday's half day of practice. It was kind of a reverse of the Buddha's river analogy of imagine life as like a river, as we do in the famous analogy about practice, and in the river is just all the stuff that's coming through in life. But instead of being on the bank, imagine you're on a floaty, an inner tube or something, and you're floating right down exactly with the current in the middle of the river. It's so effortless. It's so peaceful because you're moving exactly with what's coming along. You're not fighting it. That's living with our hearts leading us. That's living with peace leading us, with yes leading us. But what we do is we start kicking against the current, right? We start kicking against the current and trying to go a different direction than the current's leading us. That's exhausting. It is so much work to fight life. You know, what we end up is we end up pushing ourselves out of the current to the bank where nothing's moving us. And then the small mind thinks it has to start to kick to make our life happen. I have to work hard for this. But that's how we live, isn't it? So this practice, in a way, is just bringing our floaty back to the center, to the flow of the moment, where we can just let life lead us. Feel that, the difference between that. That's saying yes to life. So getting back to it's that when we're in the ego-identified mind, all the thoughts and emotions that come up from that tend to be what we spend our lives in service of. So, and these thoughts and emotions come from deeply held, mostly unconscious beliefs that we've been taught since we were tiny, that are hidden in the background. And that is why when we experience the thoughts and emotions that take us out of practice, that feel so destructive, that's why they feel like this. They tend to come uninvited, right? You're just walking along and all of a sudden some disruptive thought hits you, right? You didn't invite it. You didn't ask for it. You aren't walking around going, oh, what can I make myself miserable with today? It just comes because it's from this unconscious storehouse that's brought up by whatever's passing by, whatever causes and conditions are passing by. They come uninvited. We would not choose the thoughts we think, many of them. Same with emotions. Have you had the experience where I'm talking to somebody and something triggers me and all of a sudden I'm feeling this, it might be unworthiness, it might be irritation, it might be something. It just comes. I didn't ask for it. It comes, they just simply arise. So when we go, God, where did that come from? Some of them are obviously crazy and untrue. I mean, here's a simple one. I've been married for a long time. My husband comes home 10 minutes later than he says he's going to be home, and crazy thoughts arise. Oh, he must not love me. Oh, he must not care about me. Why would he not be here on time? I mean, those are crazy making thoughts. Probably got caught in traffic. But our minds go to places in service of fear. So when you look at it, so the point of this is, in terms of what we're going to trust to let run our life, when you look at the ego-identified mind and all the thoughts and emotions that come up without control or bidding, it's not a very good basis on which to live your life, is it? It doesn't have a good track record. So if you're going to live your life from the thoughts and the impulses of the unconscious and the ego-identified mind, well, we call that suffering. So it's not a reliable place to live from. And honestly, when I look at the messes in my life that I've created from time to time, it's all because I go down some rabbit hole of insecurity thinking or fearful thinking. And when I act from that, oh my gosh, those are things that I don't even like to think about, things I've said and done. Have we not all? It's how it is. So the first thing, I just had a quote here by Epictetus, that suffering does not come from circumstances that arise in life, but are thinking about them. So the point is this ego-identified thoughts and emotions and suffering are linked. They come together. So if we're trying to look at saying yes to life and staying effortlessly in the flow, we need to find something we can trust, that we can depend on. And it ain't the thoughts that come up in our mind. It ain't the emotions that come up. That's not where we can't trust them. If we're looking for something unshakable, unshakably peaceful and here. So one of the things that we can trust deeply that grows in practice is the present moment. Just the now. So what do we mean by the present moment? What does that mean? So close your eyes again, please, just for a moment. And ask yourself, just notice the body, notice the mind, and ask yourself, without referring to the mind, but ask yourself from awareness, from the body, from the heart, Is anything missing or wrong right now? Ask the heart. Ask the body. Ask awareness. And the answer is no. Everything is just happening right now. And when you relax into that, notice the effect on the body. My shoulders come down, they relax, belly softens. Practicing meditation is to see that all we ever truly experience is this, it's the now. And with the experience of that, in the flow of the body, the feelings, what you're experiencing right now, you realize there is no role for the mind to control or to do. You're in the now. There is nothing for the mind to do. The mind is simply the instrument that knows your experience. It happens quite automatically and without any effort from a separated or egoic me. So go ahead and open your eyes. So when we stay in the now, begins to dawn on us that there is no separate person there running experience. There's just the flow of experience. That's all there is. There's just the flow of life experiencing itself through the portal of this body mind, which is what makes it so much fun. So here's the thing. When we start referring to the mind only knows the past and the future. Check this out in your experience. You'll notice when the mind begins to interfere, like when my mind said, oh, I don't want to be thinking about the talk. I want to just be in my meditation. It is looking to the future. It's looking to where I want to be giving the talk and trying to control that. But I can't actually experience the future, can I? No matter what I was thinking in the moment, then it's just happening now. Does that make sense to everybody? The same thing with the past. We can remember the past, but as we're remembering the past, it's happening right now. If you think you can actually re-experience your past, here's the challenge. Remember what you had for dinner last night? Well, if you can really re-experience that, eat something different. You can't do it. All we can do is reconstitute the past in the now. And as far as like trying to experience the future, we don't know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, in the next breath, next week. I mean, a car could come crashing through the wall here. So we cannot experience the future. We can't experience the past. All we really can experience is right now. So why are so many of our thoughts from the past or in the future? Why is it always moving us away from present experience? It's because the egoic self is the attempt to control everything. It is itself, it is resistance. So this moving away from the moment is needed by your egoic self in order to sustain itself, in order to keep itself going. Your being, on the other hand, your being, the ground of who you are, can only experience the now. It only experiences the present. More than that, your being is the now. So we've got two things. The imaginary self, the egoic self, is in the past and present, which can only be experienced in imagination. The truth of your being, which is that effortless flowing down on the current that feels so good, that is the now. So here's the Dharma bombshell. We can only experience the now. We cannot experience the past or the future. They only happen in our imagination. When that is clear to you, and take that out for a test drive, therefore, the subsequent belief that we are separate also only exists in imagination. The separation that only can go to the future and the past because that's only experienced in imagination, the sense that the belief that you are a separate being is also purely imaginary. That's the bombshell. So close your eyes again with me. Keep with me with that. So we are so used to carrying the burden of our past around with us as though it's real. The mistakes, the limitations, the disappointments. Take a moment and let yourself feel just the cost of carrying around the past as though it's real, as though it's the ground of who you are. It's pretty big. Now feel the weight lift as the burden of the past and the fear of the future dissolve into right now, this moment that's complete and nothing is missing. How would it feel to live without the weight of the past and the fear of the future? Let your heart contemplate this. What would it be like to live if truly you've just got the now, and that's all you have? Again, what would it be like to understand that we are always just here? We're not going anywhere. We need nothing from the body, mind, or our loved ones, or our jobs, or our communities, or life circumstances to be complete. How does that feel? It is the floating down the current in the middle of the river without effort. There is complete peace because there's no resistance. So let's use this understanding. Stay with me a few minutes longer to come back to what it means to say yes to life. So go back now and to the unpleasant aversion that you felt, anything unpleasant that you were experiencing or you might be experiencing now. However subtle, just the part that wants to say no. So stay in the moment, and you'll notice that that force of aversion is just an energy. It's just a vibration. Notice that there's a lot of room to just say, oh, there's nothing I need to do with it. I don't need to control it. Just say yes to it. Here's the energy of irritation, the energy of discomfort. So saying yes to it doesn't mean you like it. It just means you say, you're here. I see you. Take the time and space you need. When you do that, it feels different, doesn't it? We don't do it to change it, but it has to change because you've changed everything. So if you stay with this practice of saying yes, you find that all that comes up are situations, not problems. Just, oh, this. And another thing, you'll notice that the now in the present, anything you need to respond to, whatever has come up, will come up, will be there. Whatever you need to attend to it arises with it. There's no need for the mind to comment, fix, judge. It's all complete. So come on back and close your eyes. This is a big contemplation. The mind can't even imagine living with this kind of freedom. The mind goes, oh my God, if we really lived like this, who would feed the cat? So it takes some time to even get used to the possibility. Another teacher, I remember I read years ago, I think in Lion's Roar or something, said that awakening is living at a level of surrender that's deeper than what the mind can even imagine. So it takes some time to, this takes time to seep in. And what's interesting is when you live in the yes without making any effort, you notice that it begins to seep into your habitual thinking and feeling patterns. What you notice is different kinds of thoughts come up. We've all noticed this in practice. The thing that used to always tick us off, like getting cut off in traffic, it comes up and you're like, huh. And then you're going, wow, where's all the anger around that? It just goes. The saying yes to the now eventually seeps into your life and it cleans everything. It adjusts everything. It basically just brings it into alignment with your being, which intrinsically does not resist anything, which is why it is peacefulness. It is contentment. So how does this work in real life? So it's not a perfect practice, and it doesn't need to be, and we don't need to aspire to do this perfectly in any way. I want to give an example of something that happened in my own life. My cholesterol got a little high, and I thought, okay, I need to up my game, you know, exercise more, whatever. And I've made some changes. And one of the things I thought I'd get back to is I used to jog. And so, I thought, okay, well, I do a gym workout, but I thought jogging is so cardiovascularly efficient. Why don't I'll just run a mile. Just not enough to, you know, start having knee problems. So Monday morning, I got out, and within 400 yards of that, I pulled a hamstring. And there was this pain, and my mind, my ego-identified mind that was, I'm going to do this, had a tantrum. It was like, oh, no, but this was my plan. Now I won't be able to, you know, my plan is going to go wrong, and what will I do? And oh my gosh, and maybe this is just being too old and my body's too frail. And I mean, it was just this storm came up, you know, and I'm just like, wow, I'm really caught. I'm really disappointed. And then a bit later, I sat with that in practice and thought, how can I say yes? Okay, all right, you got a pain. I mean, the situation is you got a pain in your leg. So I went out the next day and I thought, okay, well, what movements trigger the pain and what don't? And I realized I could run backward. I run backward and it doesn't trigger it. And I can also skate sideways, you know, kind of that sideways thing. So that's what I've been doing. It does the same thing. Within half a minute, I'm breathing hard, my heart's racing, you know, all the things. But I think without saying yes to it, I'm not sure I ever would have gotten to the point of, well, there are other things possible. So that's what I mean. In the now, it suddenly occurred to me to explore it and just find something that would work. And you know, and in time, what happens is the minute your mind goes into one of those crap storms, that itself, it's so uncomfortable. You're like, oh wait, what am I saying no to here? So it kind of happens in time. Helen Hamilton, who's a non-dual teacher I've been listening to a lot, she made a remark that awakened life is the habitual, unconditional, ongoing saying yes. So I wanted to say, notice this is not about changing anything in your experience. It's not about changing feelings of impatience when you have them, or feelings of physical stress when you have them, or of reactions to things when the body has reactions to things. You know, somebody startles you and there's that reaction in the body. It's not about changing our experience. It's just saying, okay, you're there. So There's actually another part to this talk, but I think I've run out of time. But what I do want to say is, this practice leading to a possible life of great ease and great freedom is possible. And means so much to me. It is what Jesus of Nazareth once referred to as the pearl of great price. The person finds this pearl in a field, and so he sells everything he has to buy the field to have the pearl that's in that field. It's like that. Once this starts to grow in you, and you begin to experience this ease, this yesness, I mean, my whole life, I've never trusted things. I didn't grow up in a very trusting family. And for the first time, I'm starting to feel what it's like to say, I can trust life. I can trust the present because I trust the present. And there's just a sense of ease and freedom. And it's possible to live in it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.